This is great. Let's hear it for the President of the United States. You know, if anybody told me 12 years ago that I'd be standing up here with Bear Bryant and George Wallace and Gerald Ford calling all of them friend, I'd have told them they were crazy. I sure am glad you turned out tonight to see me so I could draw these fellows a crowd. I want to quickly reintroduce to you my two colleagues in the House, Bill Dickinson and John Buchanan. Now, you probably think that Bear Bryant is here because he's on the Athletes for Ford Committee. That's not really true. We were afraid we were going to have rain, and we knew he could control it. And we knew if he couldn't, he could show us how to walk on water. I want to tell Bear Bryant how much we appreciate him coming. We know that he had a great day yesterday beating Vanderbilt 42-14. But let me tell you about another game. Gerald Ford's Michigan beat Jimmy Carter's Navy 70-14. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce to you at this time Coach Paul Bear Bryant from the University of Alabama.
Thank you, Congressman Edwards. Mr. President, Governor Wallace, other distinguished guests, and ladies and gentlemen. First, I want to congratulate all you Auburn people on your great victory over Tennessee yesterday. Every day of my life, I thank God for being an American. And every day of my life, I thank God and the people of Alabama for being an Alabamian. And I'm very proud of the fact that I'm a real small part of football. But since football is about the only thing that I think I'm knowledgeable on, I will talk in football terminology. I recognize the fact that in some quarters, they won't agree with me on that. In any event, I met President Ford when we were both young assistant football coaches about the start of the Second World War. After the war, I followed his career in Washington with great interest. And when our team, our great team, our American team, was floundering around in last place 3 or 4 years ago, we all recall when he was tapped as the head coach for the American team. He accepted the challenge with great determination and I think a plan that he believed in so strongly that he would never compromise. In any event, it's a known fact that under his leadership and direction, the American team, who had their back to the 1 yard line, has moved out past midfield, moving down toward the other goal line, and is on the threshold of winning many great games. But it's about time that we, the American people, have to decide who's the head coach for the next 4 years. Now that coach and that administration, in all probability, is going to have a far-reaching effect on every American in the world. That head coach, that administration, is going to have a far-reaching effect on the future of my children, my grandchildren, your children, your grandchildren. Which causes me to think of something that former Governor Connally of Texas said. Now, this is not his words, but in effect, he said, when you are deciding who's going to be the next head coach, you will, of course, consider all the great problems in America they'll be confronted with. But says you also should take in the great or the tough games that's going to be played with the Russians, the Chinese, and other great teams, and tough teams all over the world, and says they don't play with softballs. That impressed me. I love my country. I love my children. I love my grandchildren. And I want somebody as the next head coach that's been in the arena. And although I'm a Democrat, come November the 2nd, I'm proudly going to vote for Gerald Ford for President of the United States. And I respectfully ask you to consider the same thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bear. I'm genuinely pleased that Governor Wallace has accepted the President's invitation to join us tonight. The Governor's a busy man. I know it's not easy to give up a Sunday night. And I'm so very appreciative of the fact that he's here to greet the President and to welcome him to Alabama. Governor Wallace knows that what the campaign trail is all about. He knows the weariness that descends upon a politician who's making his last speech of a long day. And so I'm sure he can empathize with President Ford tonight. Governor Wallace is a dedicated public servant who is, in many ways, has put Alabama on the map. He's determined, he's a courageous man who fights as hard as anyone I know for what he believes in, and I admire any person who does that. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to present at this time our beloved governor, the Honorable George C. Wallace.
Thank you, Congressman Edwards, Mr. President, Coach Bryant, of course, Congressman Edwards, Dickinson, and Buchanan. I'm here tonight, Mr. President, as the governor of Alabama. And one reason I'm here as the governor of Alabama is because Coach Bear Bryant didn't decide he wanted to be governor himself, you know, otherwise he would have been his governor. So I want to thank him for letting me be governor. And I want to say to you, on behalf of myself, my family, and the people of Alabama, that we appreciate very much your coming to this great state of ours. And I want you to know, as you've already found out and already know, that the people of Alabama respect the office of the Presidency of the United States, and they respect and honor the person who occupies that position. And therefore, you occupy that position, Mr. Ford, and they respect and honor you. And therefore, I know that I speak for all Alabamians who love our nation and who respect you and are glad to have you here. And I know I speak for all Alabamians and people in our nation when I say that during your tenure of service in the office of the presidency, however long that might be, the people of Alabama hope that you and pray that you are successful insofar as what the chief executive can do toward the solution of our problems, domestic and foreign, that you will be eminently successful. We wish you Godspeed, Mr. President. You have honored us by coming to Alabama. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Governor Wallace. 12 years ago, when Bill Dickinson and John Buchanan and I went to Washington, we were a new breed of Deep South Republican, and many in Washington didn't quite know how to take us. One fella reached out and grabbed hold of us and offered us help, worked with us, taught us the ropes, and that fellow was Gerald Ford. He was a minority leader then, and we've come to know him well over the last 12 years. He served as minority leader of the House while we've been there for about 9 years. He was then named vice president, and of course has been president the last 2 years. As the secretary of the House Republicans, it's my pleasure and privilege to meet with him every week. And I've watched him over the last 2 years as we sit in the cabinet room and discuss the issues facing this nation. And I must say to you that I feel very comfortable sitting there. We have a very stable president, a president who knows what he's about, a president who is not afraid to solicit opinions and listen to them and weigh them as we meet there every week. My wife has known his wife for 12 years. It's the only way I can put it is we've just been good friends. And it gives me a great amount of pleasure to come here and talk to you for just a moment about my friend. This is something I don't feel like I've got to do from a political standpoint. Gerald Ford has been a friend to all of us from the Alabama delegation. There's no way I can really describe to you the great feeling that we have of closeness to him, the feeling we have of great confidence in his administration. He knows this area well. He's been to Mobile. This is his third time to come to Mobile since I've been in Congress. He's been to Birmingham. He's been to Montgomery. He knows our state well. He understands our problems. And I'm just delighted, more than you know, to have him here tonight. It gives me a great amount of pleasure to present to you the President of the United States, Gerald R. Ford.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Congressman Jack Edwards, Governor Wallace, Congressman Dickinson, Buchanan, and of course your great coach, Bear Bryant. All of you wonderful people from Mobile and the state of Alabama, what a grand conclusion of a super day, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I especially want to indicate my gratitude, Governor Wallace, for your accepting my invitation to come to Mobile and to give me a welcome in front of your wonderful friends from the state of Alabama. I've known Governor Wallace ever since I was the minority leader. He was your governor. We worked together then. We worked together when I was vice president. I've attended a number of conferences where governors and the president were in session. And our working relationship in trying to solve problems, regardless of whether Governor Wallace is a Democrat and I'm a Republican, that was the aim and the objective of our relationship. And I can say without hesitation, I have never known anyone who I could work better with in that relationship, and I thank you very, very much. You don't know how pleased I am, how honored I am with the comments by my longtime friend, Bear Bryant. He is right. We graduated, he from the University of Alabama, and I from the University of Michigan. He got into coaching, and I did. He did a lot better in coaching than I did. But let me say that I'm a good Monday morning quarterback. When it comes to reading the paper and seeing what ball teams win and what ball teams lose. I don't offer the advice because I played and coached, and I found that, you know, there's nothing like the coach who's there and the players who have to play. But I have great respect for the players that are successful and the coaches who are successful. And I want to commend all of you here in the great state of Alabama for not only having a great university and a great university at Auburn, but I want to commend you for having, I think, one of the outstanding coaches, not only from the point of view of technically being a great coach, being a great leader of men, and that's what really counts. Thank you very much, Bear. When I made the acceptance speech in Kansas City, I made a pledge, and I used these words. I said that I will not concede a single state. I will not concede a single vote. I was going to travel this country from the snowy banks of Minnesota to the sunny plains of Georgia, and that I was going to cut across this country, north, south, east, and west. We were going to have a national campaign. And in the last 2 days, I've traveled by riverboat, I've traveled by car, by plane, and it's been a tremendous experience. We've been in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and we're going to Florida after we leave here tonight. But what impresses me is that we come to these wonderful states where I think we have great support, and I think with all the enthusiasm and drive and the right principles, we're going to surprise some people down here in these states. And let me tell you why. As Coach Bryant said, on August 9, 1974, when I became president, there were some pretty dark clouds in this country. We had gone through some traumatic experiences. The people were divided. There was great unhappiness. We had had riots in our streets and riots on our campuses. We were facing a serious economic problem. There had been a loss of trust and faith in the White House itself. We were still involved in Vietnam. It wasn't a very pleasant time. As Coach Bryant said, we were back about on our own goal line. But we found in the next 2 years that the American people had the kind of character. The American people wanted to work together, and that we had the kind of government that gave to us the opportunity to bring our country forward. And what's happened? We've restored faith and trust in the White House. We have turned the economy around from inflation of over 12% to under 6%. We've added 4 million jobs from the depth of the recession in the last 17 months. Meaningful jobs with a chance for advancement. And we're going to do better. And I won't be satisfied as your president until we get a job for everybody who wants to work and will work and will look for work. And then we've extricated ourselves from Vietnam. We have peace. We have the military strength and the diplomatic skill to keep the peace. We don't do it through the draft. We do it through an all-volunteer military force. And we're going to keep the peace not only at home by doing a better job in solving our problems of crime, but we're going to give the leadership throughout this whole world to keep the peace that's so essential, so the blessings of America can be spread beyond our own shores. But let me make a comment about our military strength. And I'm so pleased that in the background, if the light was such, that we could see the Coast Guard Aviation Training Facility. You should be complimented on the fine job they do, and we're proud of them. That brings up the subject that I think is of vital importance. I'm very proud of the fact that in the last 2 years, I've submitted to the Congress and to the American people the two largest military budgets in the history of America, not for the purpose of making war, but for the purpose of preserving peace. And we've turned the situation around so that now the Congress, after cutting defense expenditures for the last 10 years, some $50 billion, we've convinced the Congress that it's important, it's vital, it's essential that America remain number one, that America will be number one, so we can keep the peace, deter aggression, and protect our national security. But I want to warn you about one thing. I am dismayed that my opponent thinks you can make a stronger Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps by cutting them $5 to $7 to $9 to $15 billion. You can't do it. He ought to know better. And under President Ford, we won't. Hey. But as long as we build our military capability for the preservation of peace here and abroad, we have to do things to build up our economy so that we can take full advantage of the natural blessings that we have here at home. I can recall hearing about the Tennessee Tom Bigbee project when I first went to the Congress in 1949. Nothing has pleased me more than to see the construction that is underway for this great public works project. And let me say without hesitation that the Ford administration will make certain that it will proceed and proceed at full funding. In 1976, we recommended about $65 billion. In 1977, it was about $85 to $90 billion. And the latest figures for planning for the next fiscal year, something over $100 million. That's the kind of support that the Ford administration gives to the Tennessee Tom Bigbee, a good project which we want not just for you, but for all America. But we have to think in even broader terms than that. We have to think about the quality of life that we want for 215 million Americans for the next 4 years and the next century. And what are those things? I mentioned earlier that we want a job for everybody who wants to work, who will work, and will look for work. We want a home for every family that'll work and save. And we want that home for them in a decent neighborhood. We'll get that kind of a program and those kinds of homes under a Ford administration. We have built almost 3 million homes in the last 2 years under this administration, and we'll be doing better in the next 4 years. We all want the best in medical care, and we have the capability of doing it, and we want it so that the American people will have an opportunity to get that care. There's no reason in this country why a person should go broke just to get well, and they won't under this administration. And then every one of us for the last 4 or 5 years has worried about crime. The crime rate went up in 1974. It dropped off a little in 1975. We have some encouraging news in the first 6 months of 1976. It's down to a net gain of 3%. But we have to make certain under our crime legislation in the courts of this country that the people who commit the crimes go to jail so that we can protect the innocent victims of crime in America. Well, it's just great to be here in this wonderful state of Alabama. As I was coming into the airport, I was looking forward to seeing Governor Wallace. You know, in 1972, Governor Wallace went up to the state of Michigan. He got involved in the primary on the Democratic ticket, and everybody was saying he didn't have a chance. But you know what he did? He got 51% of the vote. I think I'll take him to Michigan to help me in 1976. We've had a wonderful bicentennial anniversary. How many of you felt better on July 4th when we celebrated our 200th birthday? I know I did. I went to Valley Forge, I went to Philadelphia, I went to New York. I had the opportunity to see people of all walks of life in many states just get a new faith in America, a rebuilding, a rekindling of this great spirit that made America grow from 13 poor, struggling colonies 200 years ago to a nation of 215 million builders, people who today, whether they live on the East Coast, the North, or the South, or the East, or the West, we're builders and we've got that spirit. This is what made America great. This is what will keep America great. And each of us must pledge, regardless of our political faith or belief, our dedication to a better America. I know you will, I will, and I know that America in the next 4 years, in the next century, will be a greater and greater country just because of us. Now one final question. I've had a great time, and we came over from the Mississippi and Alabama line, saw so many friendly faces, and to see this tremendous crowd here. Can I ask you a favor? We've got a big election November 2nd. I want your support. Can I have it? Thank you very, very much. It's been great to be here. I won't let you down. Thank you, Governor Wallace. Thank you very much, Bear. Thank you, Jack Edwards. Thank you, Bill Dickinson. Thank you, John Buchanan. Elect them. I need them. You need them. We all need them in Washington representing you. Thank you.